Thank you for everybody who's substituting for other members who can't be here. I draw your attention to the changes of levels throughout the chamber, and if you hear the fire bell, follow me. Right, apologies for absence.
Apologies for absence have been received from Councillors Hurd, McKenzie and St Joseph. In accordance with notice given, Councillor Bass will be acting as a substitute for Councillor St Joseph and Councillor Fuca a substitute for Councillor McKenzie.
Thank you. To confirm the minutes of the previous meeting. Agreed?
Agreed.
Thank you. Disclosure of interest, to disclose the existence and nature of any disposal, pecuniary interest, other pecuniary interest or non-pecuniary interest relating to items of business on the agenda having regard to paragraph 6 to 8, inclusive of the code of conduct for members. Noted? Right. Fraud update, agenda item 5. Who's doing that?
Okay. Thank you, Chairman. So this update is to present the findings of the European Institute for Combating Corruption and Fraud. We'll call them TCAF from now. The Audit Commission used to produce a document protecting the public purse on an annual basis, and following the closure of the Audit Commission, many of the Audit Commission fraud team set up this new organisation and continued much of the good work undertaken by the Audit Commission. So you will have noted that the document protecting the public purse was available as a background paper. It's quite a detailed document, so not printed, but is publicly available anyway. Arising from that briefing, from that document, there was a checklist, if you like, which is recommended to be considered by those charged with governance and at Northern District Council, that is the Audit Committee. So Appendix 1 to your report outlines the Council's position in respect of a few key areas identified in protecting the public purse related to the fraud position. In addition to the general document protecting the public purse, the TCAF also produced a tailored briefing which is specific to Maldon and comparing Maldon District Council with other district councils in the region. So the other background paper was that briefing, and it's also on the screen in front of you. So I'll talk you through that.
Okay. So we've got a technical failure.
TCAF recommend using this to have a debate with members about fraud and bringing in aspects from protecting the English public purse to highlight risk and counter fraud resource. So the purpose of the fraud briefing is there. I won't read through that with you. Do I need to aim it?
You're too far away from the server, probably.
No. Right. Is it? Oh, it's gone. Right, thank you. Sorry. Okay. So this next slide is just a little bit of information about TCAF. I've already explained it's staff from the Audit Commission. I think we can move on from that. Okay. Following this next slide, there are a series of bar charts which illustrate where Maldon District Council sits in relation to fraud performance against other district councils across the east of England. And that's only those obviously taking part in the annual survey. So there was a submission rate for district councils of 59.7 nationally. On the next few slides, Maldon District Council is shown in red and for detected value, and yellow is the detected number of cases reported. So you'll see we're right in the middle there, which for a small authority is good. You'll notice on that slide a couple of peaks In the value of detected fraud. One council did have a very big abuse of position case which skewed the value for them. The other is the peak right on the right hand side, and you'll notice they've got a high value of detected fraud but no number of recorded cases. So where there's no number of cases recorded, for the purpose of the survey it's reported as nil, so it's in theory that peak should be further to the left hand side of the chart with the higher number of cases. Did that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. Okay. So there's now a couple of slides about specific types of fraud. This next one is explaining about housing benefit and council tax benefit fraud. So there's some questions at the bottom of that slide which are addressed to the audit committee, those charged with governance. Does my council have enough counter-fraud resource to tackle non-benefit post-CFIS? CFIS is obviously the Single Fraud Investigation Service, and our cases were transferred over to CFIS in September. So the answer to that is it's obviously early days following the transfer of the counter-fraud resources to the planning and enforcement team. Much of their time thus far has been spent on planning enforcement cases, but obviously the remit of the team is much wider than that, so we'll obviously keep a watching review of this. The next point relates to, does my council's counter-fraud resource have the skill set to tackle the wide and varied range of non-benefit fraud? The new team job descriptions apply generic working to the team, and the team leader is working to implement that and enhance the training and also to develop the Proceeds of Crime Act capability within the team to increase the scope of their work. So that's the direction they're taking. The final point, is there a partnership working arrangement available that helps provide a counter-fraud resource and value for money? So prior to transfer to the planning team, the fraud team had started working in partnership with other local authorities and housing authorities, and has options with another local authority to provide to apply the Proceeds of Crime Act if we have a case that's suitable for it before the team have the training in-house. And in fact, the Proceeds of Crime Act training was part of the council's successful bid to the Counter Fraud Fund. So hopefully that ticks all those boxes for you. Okay, so this slide specifically relates to council tax discount fraud. And okay. So there are some other adjustments have been made in respect of council tax discounts and exemptions which weren't classified as fraud. So for this, we haven't reported much in the way of council tax discount fraud, but it doesn't mean that there's discounts being applied that haven't been taken away where they should have been. So the revenues team leader has undertaken to refer any potential fraud cases for investigation, and they also now apply penalties in some cases. In the current year to date, around £1,000 worth of penalties have been applied for council tax discounts. So there's obviously different options that we can take, different routes that we can take for that. Okay, social housing fraud. As I mentioned earlier, that Maldon District Council staff had worked alongside housing associations for several years. Obviously, housing associations don't have legal powers to prosecute for fraud, but we do, and it's of benefit to us as an authority to work with them in those cases to bring houses for people that need them. Okay, So other frauds, so these are frauds identified as key fraud risk areas in protecting the public purse. So there's a summary of findings in respect of the East of England and Morden District Council. So for procurement frauds, this relates to anything throughout the procurement process, including sourcing, letting of contracts, contract management. The value can be high on the basis of odd cases. There is a neighbouring authority identified quite a large case at over 200,000 a couple of years ago, so one case can skew the value quite significantly. On the next point, no recourse to public funds. This is an emerging fraud risk and relates to immigrants subject to immigration controls which prevent them accessing welfare benefits or public housing. And such families can sometimes receive assistance. There's been an increase in the use of fake documents, such as claiming they have children and so on. So that's an emerging fraud risk that we'll keep a watch on. Business rates. So this is things like false claims for empty property or charity relief. Tackling business rates is more important, obviously, with the business rates retention scheme. We need to ensure we're getting as much out of that as possible. And internal fraud, the risk here reinforces the need for effective internal controls. And finally, just some links there for other information. I'm happy to take any questions.
No, I was just reading it all because it's only just gone up there. Right, does that complete your presentation? Councillor Pratt.
Chairman, I fully understand what the office is coming from, and I propose we accept recommendations 1 and 2. I'm not quite sure what recommendation 7 means.
Yeah, I know. It's 4, 5, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Is that something we should, having had this presentation, yeah, that we should consider for the next meeting rather than doing it now?
Yeah. Any actions required to improve fraud prevention? Have we got any actions that we're proposing?
I believe, Chairman, this is something we could consider and actually bring it back at our next meeting rather than debate it now.
Yes, we can do that. Yeah. I was just wondering why, when a number of cases detected is below average, is it because there's not much fraud going on in the rural district, or we're not really good at detecting it, or a bit of both?
Chairman, if I may, I think when we had this presentation the last time, we were told it's there, it's how diligent we are in finding it.
Yeah.
And when it says nil, 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 it was the last presentation I had,
yeah,
it was an indication that we are not paying enough, because yeah, if you look hard enough, you will find it.
Yeah.
But we can't afford to find it, so it's not worth doing, I believe.
But this is a way of adding value, because it would look as if there's about £200,000 worth of fraud going on and we're not detecting it, and that might well fund a post to go out there and find it.
Okay. Yes to all of those points. The TCAF obviously do produce very detailed information, but one thing they don't advocate is publishing detailed detection information for each authority, because that is considered to be an aid to fraudsters who will look at neighbouring authorities. If there are two that are detecting a lot and one in the middle that isn't, you know where they're going to go. So yes, the expectation is that there is a lot out there. What we would need to seek to do as an authority is to be proportionate in our response, so to be aware of the risks that are key for us and to tackle the highest priority risks. And yes, there's a lot more fraud out there, but it's that cost-benefit analysis, isn't it?
Are we still using data matching software and Facebook and other social media sites?
Absolutely, yes. There's a general data matching exercise every 2 years, and this council does participate in that. There are additional matches in the years in between which relate to specifically to council tax discount fraud, and that's a very cost-effective way of identifying, of undertaking a vast matching exercise to identify potential fraud areas. Some of the matches won't be fraud, but always worth a look. And
thank you. Councillor Fluker.
I know you're keen to move on, but I think Councillor Pat makes a good point with regards to Roman 7, which I think should actually be Roman 3.
Yeah.
But what concerns me enormously about this is the fact that we, this facility for detection and identification rests with a team which also includes planning enforcement, and I think all the members will agree with me that planning enforcement has been something of a muddle now for a number of years.
Yeah.
And I think that any report that comes back to this committee should really look at how the two pieces of work are merging, because one feels that planning enforcement is going to take over this fall. But I do take a great deal of comfort in the fact that in 2.2 it says quite clearly that the 151 officer is that post duty to put one officer will be watching very carefully what the enforcement team are doing and what the fraud team are doing. Thank you, Chairman. But I certainly support Councillor Pratt.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fluker. I am keeping a watchful eye on the financial issues as well as preventing fraud. What is reassuring is Appendix 1 of this report, which Angie did analysis about the a checklist for those responsible for governance, which includes the audit committee. So for all those criteria, you'd be pleased to know that most of the answers are yes. Or in part. So I think we do have quite a robust system in place. And I think it is early days for the corporate enforcement team because, they are, part of the team. They are still learning about the new planning enforcement regime. So to bring a report back to the next committee might be a bit soon. So could I suggest maybe, to consider that as part of the work plan for the 16-17 work plan for the day.
Thank you.
Okay.
Right, we're asked to note recommendations 1 and 2, and 7, that should be 3, is going to come back to us in...
As part of the 16-17 work plan.
As part of the 16-17 work plan. Is that agreed? Thank you. Right. Agenda item 6, quarterly review of corporate risk.
Thank you, Chairman. This is the usual quarterly review of our corporate risk. Members would note that back in April, this committee approved the corporate risk register for 15-16, and there are 16 items on there. So for quarter two, as you can see from paragraph 2.1, all of the scores, bar one, have changed. So the only sort of risk that's changed in terms of the school is item 13, which is relating to the core values. So as you can see, the score has reduced from 6 to 4, and it is because our HR team, they have put in place a corporate core value group, which identifies the future core values of the council, and that group has now come up with a set of core values for consideration by the corporate leadership team. So hence the reason why the score has reduced. Happy to take any questions.
We're asked to views on Appendix 1, none, and are we happy that corporate risk is being managed effectively? Agreed? Thank you. Right. Agenda item 7, progress against the 15-16 internal audit plan.
Thank you, Chairman. OK. Okay. So this report identifies the progress against the current year's plan, and Appendix 1 gives a summary of the progress. There are various follow-up audits which are listed in also 2552 in the report. So these are the audits where there are currently recommendations outstanding, although we are talking to the officers concerned about implementation of those recommendations and signing them off on the TEMS system. So back to Appendix 1 on the follow-up audits. Two of those are reported as complete now, and there are a number of audits in progress at the moment. There's one audit that has been completed since the last report to the Audit Committee in September, and that's outlined in Appendix 2. That was the debt recovery audit, which was classified as limited assurance, and Appendix 2 outlines the action plan that's been agreed with the auditees to resolve the weaknesses identified in that audit. And Chairman, I'm happy to take any questions.
All right. Could I, on paragraph 2552, where we had a list of outstanding audits, have they all now been signed off in TEMS, or are we still wait for somebody to wake up?
They're not all signed off in 10. I believe that action is being taken, and we'll follow this up again for the next meeting.
Okay, then, because there's six there that should have been completed some time ago. So they have been completed, it's just they haven't, TEMS doesn't show them to be completed, or we don't know.
I believe that some are in the process of being completed, and that the TEN system hasn't yet been updated to reflect
the progress.
Well,
the guilty parties need to get a verbal warning that if they don't complete these, then we'll get the big stick out. Yeah, sorry. Well, you know, the departments need to take these audit reports seriously, and obviously they're not. Yeah. Otherwise, they'd have completed them, and we need to tell them what day of the week it is.
Yep.
Right. Okay. Can that be minuted, please?
Yep.
Right. Recommendation to note the internal audit plan.
No, yes.
Three. Right. Right. Agenda item 8: external audit letter.
Thank you, Chairman. This is BDO's final annual audit letter, and it reflects it's a summary of and a distillation of the information that we reported to the committee at the last meeting in our final audit report. What the idea is, this is a version of the findings that came from out of the audit that is for more public consumption. It will be published on the PSAA website, so it will be publicly available. And the idea of it is that just literally to provide a high-level summary of the findings of the audit so that it's readily accessible for any members of the public that are interested in finding out what happened during the course of the audit. So as you'll see, the format of it effectively reflects what we do during the course of the audit. So on page 1 you'll see our executive summary, which outlines the fact that we did the financial statements audit and gave you an unqualified audit opinion, although there were some unadjusted misstatements. Section 2 is about the use of resources and the fact that we gave you an unqualified value for money conclusion for 14/15. Section 3 is about the fact that we didn't have to utilise any of our statutory powers, and there's nothing to report to anybody in respect of that. And then the final section is about the grant claims and returns. What you will note if you've read the report is that section 4 about grant claims is actually about the 13/14 work that we undertook. And the reason for that is the timing of the work. So the 14/15 work has literally been signed off last week, and we'll be bringing a report about that to the next meeting of the committee. And the good news is that of the £15 million housing benefit subsidy claim that you submitted to the DWP, we were required to make changes amounting to £6,000, which in the grand scheme of things is relatively small. Unfortunately, as we have done, and because of the way the audit works, we did need to qualify that, but the qualifications aren't significant, and the potential implications of the matters that we've reported to DWP do not have a significant impact on the financial position that the council's claimed. But we'll bring a more detailed report on that to the next committee. But that's all I wanted to say. I'm happy to take any questions that members may have.
All right. Well, Liz, we're asked to note in recommendation 5, we're asked to note the appendix. Agreed? All noted. Agenda item 9, update from the external audit. Who's taking that?
I'll just do a brief intro.
Right.
Okay.
Yep. If I could introduce our new auditor from Ernst & Young, Martina Lee, who's our audit manager for Ernst & Young, taking over the 15-16 accounts. So she has produced some useful briefing notes to our members, which are attached to this report. So I'll let you, Martina, to talk through the details with you.
I'd like to present two of our local government briefings, the latest ones that we've produced. These are briefings that we produce regularly and are updates for the local government sector and cover issues that may have an impact on Morden District Council but also on the local government sector as a whole and also the audits that we undertake. The briefing tends to highlight things such as technical issues but also matters that may have a wider potential interest. Just a couple of the issues that I'd like to bring out from these sector briefings. If we could turn to page 2 of Appendix A on the national living wage. It is unlikely that this will have an impact on the District Council. It's more of an impact for the County Councils and those authorities that have social cares and care homes. However, you should also still consider the potential impact of any changes. Particularly if there are any contracts that you have, material contracts that you have, that you may need to renegotiate or also reconsider whether you need to go ahead with the contract.
Agenda item 9.
I'd then like to take you onto page 4 of Appendix A and the highways network asset. This is a potential impact for your financial statements. It's where highways authorities have to identify those assets that are material and then bring them onto the balance sheet. At the moment, the changes to the financial regulations are being reviewed, and we're awaiting final guidance before considering the potential impact. For Morden District Council, what you should be considering at the moment is identifying those assets that could have an impact. And I've had a meeting already with Carr to discuss areas where this may have an effect, a material effect as well, and identifying those assets that may come within these new regulations. Another area that may impact on your financial statements for 2015-16 is set out on page 5 of Appendix A, which is under the Local Audit and Accountability Act 2014. The code now requires the council to produce a narrative report. At the moment, the council produces its financial statements and within that an explanatory foreword, the annual governance statement and the core financial statements. The narrative report will be to replace the explanatory foreword and should actually set out and comment, and the authority should set out and comment on its financial performance and also its economy, efficiency and effectiveness and its use of resources over the financial year. So again, that's just another change to the financial statements for 2015-16. And I'd just like to draw your attention to page 7 of 12, Appendix A, and the PSAA and their annual regulatory compliance and quality report. They've released their quality review programme annual reports for the 2014-15 audit. So while we didn't actually carry out the audit for Morden Council in 14-15, we have carried out other audits for other local government bodies during that time. Ernst & Young were one of two firms that received a green rating for the combined regularity compliance, an audit quality performance rating. The remaining 5 audit firms actually received an Amber rating. It's also the second year in a row that Ernst & Young have received the highest quality score, and we improved on last year's score as well. And we also receive green ratings for other work that we've done, such as whole of government accounts and value for money conclusion. So it's really just to give members some assurance over the services that Ernst & Young provide and the level of quality that we do in our work. If I could just quickly take you on to Appendix B, which is our most recent local government briefing. This was produced literally a couple of weeks ago in November. Just a couple of things I'd like to draw to members' attention is on page 4 of 12 of Appendix B for the local plans for new homes. In October, the government announced that councils will be required to produce local plans for new homes by 2017. Now, we do recognise that this is a challenge for many local authorities, particularly in the location that they are and geographically as well, particularly, for example, in Morden, that you do have a limited amount of space. However, this is one area where the government has said that local plans should be produced by 2017. Again, it's just a matter to bring to members' attention. And if I could just take you on to page 7, which is the consultation on 2016-17 proposed fee scales. At the moment, there are no planned changes to the overall work programme that we're going to be doing for 2016-17. So the proposal is to set the scale fee at the same level as the scale fees for 2015-16. And these fees already reflect reductions that have been carried out both in previous years and also in 2012-13, where there was a reduction of up to 40% made. These briefings do also contain questions for audit committee members on the last couple of pages. I won't go through those at the moment, but they're just really points for you to consider perhaps at future committee meetings as well.
Any questions from the current external auditor? Any? What we're asked to do. Noted. Sorry? Oh, the value for money appendix
C.
Yeah. Right. Okay, there's no. Councillor Thompson.
Thank you, Chairman. I was just wondering if it's possible to have these briefings electronically.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Please, no, appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Right. So we're now on appendix C, value for money. Alright. Do you want to go through that?
It's just appendix. It's on our value for money conclusion. So as well as the financial statements audit that we complete, we also complete a value for money conclusion. And it's really, there's just some changes for 2015-16 in our value for money conclusion. Whereas before we had two criteria, which were around securing financial resilience and also challenging how you secure economy efficiency and effectiveness, they will now come under one criteria almost, with three arrangements in place. So those three arrangements are around informed decision making, sustainable resource deployment, and working with partners. I think the one that you'll most easily recognise is sustainable resource deployment. That most easily aligns to the financial resilience, which was the old criteria. So it's just again to make you aware that there are some slightly different areas of focus that we will be picking up within our value for money conclusion work next year. We do carry out a risk-based approach to that as well, identifying any risks. And we're giving a value for money conclusion on whether you have arrangements in place rather than whether you're actually delivering value for money. And at our risk planning stage, we will see if there are any risks around giving an incorrect value for money conclusion. And as part of our value for money conclusion work, that's where we'll be focusing on those risks to make sure we give the correct value for money conclusion.
Any questions?
Again, I'm happy to take questions.
Noted.
Okay, thank you.
Agenda item 10.
Agreed.
Is that agreed? The recommendation is to ask full council to agree in principle to move the audit committee meetings to daytime meetings, and this will start January 16 with a review after 12 months. Is that agreed?
Agreed.
Oh, all right, Councillor Elliott.
Well, If that were the case, Chairman, I would have to resign from the committee because I would have to miss every one of the meetings.
There are only four meetings a year.
Well, if I can bill the the council for my fee, I would be. It would be about £500 an afternoon.
Would it be? There was a suggestion that we could start at say 4 o'clock. Would that assist in any way?
Assist if you start at 5 o'clock, even better.
Mm. We can try that.
Right.
I think.
Is that a wish that would...
That would reduce the fee to...
Councillor Dowell.
Well, personally, I have no issue with it, Chairman, in that I could, you know, work around it. But I do think that, you know, we need to be careful because there are legitimately some members, not necessarily of this committee, perhaps, but there are, of course, you know, who do work full time, and I appreciate it's only four meetings a year, but I think it would
only four meetings in between January and
well, yes, okay, and I just think that it puts those particular members that work at a disadvantage.
It does.
So you know, as I said, on a personal basis, I can make arrangements around it. But other members, it's not quite so easy, and we have to consider members who may be on the committee for municipal years.
The expertise of people who've gainfully employed is a part of the balance of a committee. Otherwise, it's made up of retirees, pensioners, farmers. Anyway, Councillor Bass, you wanted to...
Only, Mr Chairman, that we did actually consider a similar paper at ONS, and that actually gave two options, and one was to start in January 2016, and the second option was to start at the annual general meeting. Mm. And I think if we were going to do this, I think the second option would be preferable, because then at least people have a choice.
Yes.
And then people could say... Well, I don't really want to go on that committee because I cannot make afternoon meetings. So I think it would be unfair to change it at January.
So there's an amendment proposed in the name of Councillor Bass to change the date to May 16?
Yes.
May 16, after the AGM. Are we agreed to recommend to Council the principal of audit meetings during the day? But do we wish to say the start time not before 4 o'clock?
Or depends on the new committee, members of the new committee.
If we're going to do that option, we're going to go for 2 o'clock. I'll withdraw if you're going to change the time.
Yeah. Councillor Cluker.
Thank you, Chairman. In this chamber last night, there was a long and in-depth intellectual debate on this subject. Hardly driven by me, Councillor Bass. I was there as an observer, as the chairman of the meeting. But the 151 officer bases her argument on 2.2 on, amongst other things, toil, time off in lieu. I mean, one presumes if this committee were to meet at 5 o'clock, then toil would obviously impact because we'd be outside of our working day, so there actually wouldn't be any saving. But I think that Councillor Dunn makes a good point, because I think that if you start to move a lot of committees to the daytime, you will struggle to get people to sit on them.
Yeah,
and I think that the globality of this is it should be, everybody should be included in this discussion.
Yeah.
And I actually think that, you know, I sympathise with Councillor Elliott, and he brings an, as a chartered accountant, he brings another skill set to this committee, and it would be a shame to lose him and lose other members who serve on other committees.
And Councillor Hurd works in the audit
and
as well.
Indeed. So I do wonder whether or not we should look at all of the committees and perhaps encourage all of the committees to try and hold at least half of their meetings during the daytime, and that would be fair to everybody. But mine is not to interfere the work of this committee, because Chairman, I am a substitute today.
Our recommendation now reads, as it is on the order paper, except for May 16, which was agreed as an amendment. Do we want it to go forward like that to Council?
Yeah.
Right.
Can I have my vote? Can I have my recorded vote against that?
Yeah.
Can I just add, Mr. Chairman, if you're going, if
we haven't had a vote yet.
Sorry.
I was just saying that if there was some suggestion that we could perhaps have it at 5 o'clock. Mm. Now, one of the reasons is that of bringing these meetings during the daytime is to try and free up some of the evenings. Now, the chances are that if there's a date, the chances are there will be another meeting that night at 7:30.
You could have men down.
Yes, and that doesn't give staff and or members time to get home, have a bit of a break, have some an evening meal, and get back out here again for 7:30. So I think if we're going to do this, it needs to be either a 2 o'clock or a 9:30 start. Because otherwise we're just going to fudge it.
Yeah. Councillor Pluker.
I mean, if we move back into the daytime, then this, I'm delighted that our new auditor's here, because, I mean, the 151 officer is quite keen on spending £12,000 to create a new meeting room to deal with our needs at the moment. But if we start moving council meetings into the day, this is going to put an awful lot of pressure on it. I think it's going to put a lot of pressure on our facilities. And I do wonder whether or not this has been thought through, because at the moment we are told that our current meeting rooms are under so much pressure, we've got to create another meeting room. We're now going to start holding more meetings in the day.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is talk, Chairman, of converting the chamber into a more usable space. Mm. And one wonders whether or not all of these things should be thought about together rather than doing them piecemeal. Otherwise, we're going to end up with a lot of costs that maybe we might not have incurred.
And I know it's the Deputy Leader's... I listened to what Councillor Flinger said and agree, however... But any major work in this chamber is likely not to be in the next year because it's significant budget. I don't see any reason why we shouldn't go along with this proposal and trial it for a year.
Yeah.
This is the logical committee to trial it with because it only has the 4 meetings.
Yeah.
I don't see any reason, and then, you know, we'll address the office space. So this room is not utilised as much as the other meeting rooms.
Yeah. So
could we second that?
Yeah, we haven't had a second of a councillor Bassett. I thought it was seconded, but
no.
Yeah.
I'm very careful to debate. I'm more inclined to second councillor Sandy's proposal for the improvement.
But we did have a proposal to amend the recommendation to from January to May, which was proposed by Councillor Bass and seconded by Councillor Durham. We'll take a vote on that.
I haven't.
Yeah.
You did. Am I going to be allowed to speak?
Yes,
I forgot what I was going to say.
Maybe the daytime.
I do remember now. I do believe that I support Councillor Fluker completely, that all these things should be looked at in the round.
Right.
It's obvious that when the alterations were made downstairs and the bowling alley was created, nobody thought about how cramped it was going to be upstairs.
Mm.
So, I mean, before we make further adjustments and further changes, we should look at everything and see how they interlock.
All right.
I think we need to...
Would you say? Yeah. Well, we've got a proposed amendment to the recommendation to name of Councillor Bass and duly seconded. Do we take a vote on that? Those in favour of the recommendation? And those against? That's it. Oh, that's 3 each, wasn't it?
Chairman, can I just ask? I thought Councillor Bass was substituting for Councillor Elliott. Is that not true?
No.
Substituting for Councillor St Joseph.
Four versus two.
Yeah.
So
that amendment was carried 4-2.
4-2, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. You can debate it at council anyway. It's only a recommendation to council.
Oh, yes, of course. I think, to be fair,
Mr. Chairman, that was an amendment,
yes,
which is purely to change the effective time.
Right, yeah.
I think, to be clear, we've got to have another vote on
So the substantive motion now reads as on paper, except for May 16. Those agreed to the motion that we would recommend to council to move the audit committee meetings to daytime starting in May. Is that agreed?
Right.
Sorry, I'm not voting, I'm asking a question.
Okay, so we said during the day, but did we settle on when, or is that for later discussion?
During
what
the day.
Time? Yeah, well, during the day doesn't.
During the day.
Sometime during the day. Okay.
Yeah, it's four. Yeah. So that's agreed. All right.
Yeah.
Was that recorded?
No, nobody asked for a recorded vote. You recorded. Yeah, but you didn't ask for a recorded vote, but you wanted your vote against it recorded.
No, and it was seconded by Councillor Fluker, a recorded vote.
What I heard, Chairman.
Okay, then. We'll go. A recorded vote. Those in favour of the recommendation. Thompson, Durham, Pratt and Bass. You got it? And those against? Councillor Fluker and Councillor Elliott, and no abstentions. Okay then? Good? Right. Any other items of business? None. Item 12, the exclusion of public and press. To resolve that under section 100A4 of the Local Government Act 72, the public be excluded from the meeting for the following item of business on the grounds that is involves the likely disclosure of exempt information as defined in paragraphs 1, 2 and 3 of part 1 of schedule 12A to the Act, and that this satisfies the public interest test. All right.